Let's talk sports. This is Kent Batty, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona, and I'll be reading to you today from the USA Today Sports Weekly for September 24th through the 30th. I'll start with the leading off column by Gabe Blax, who's a columnist for USA Today. Aaron Judge is 33, still young enough to adapt to the ever-shifting strategic winds and unrelenting competition in Major League Baseball, yet also old enough to pull from his past and to tap into the base of knowledge provided by a wide network of great players with whom he shared a clubhouse, and to somehow, despite already stashing a pair of American League MVP awards on his shelf, continue raising the ceiling for how great he can be. Judge is less than a week away from adding a bullet point on his resume that closes the case on his standing as one of the greatest hitters of all time. The three-time home run champ, whose 62 long balls in 2022 set an AL record, he's about to lead the major leagues in hitting. He entered the final six games of the regular season with a .326 average, 8 points ahead of the Athletics' Jacob Wilson. Additionally, Judge was about to lead the major leagues in slash line categories of average on base at .451 percentage and slugging percentage at .672. This century, only Barry Bonds and Albert Pujols have managed both a batting title and home run crown, and only Bonds in 2002 and Miguel Cabrera in 2013 can claim they led the major leagues in batting, on base, and slugging percentage. Judge stands above them all. In a literal sense, he's 6'7", after all, and weighs 282 pounds. He's a force who will become the tallest player to win the batting title. His perspective also affords Judge a glance at the long view of his evolution in baseball. Over the course of my career, Judge tells USA Today Sports, you go from being a minor leaguer who strikes out too much to a big leaguer that can't hit for high enough average, and you try to find different things to motivate you. Okay, they said I can't do that. Let me try and prove them wrong. Having a lot of great coaches around you and a lot of great players around you, that helps motivate you and show you the way. They may say this, but they don't know what kind of player you are. Here's what kind of player Judge is now. His next home run, after press time, will be the 50th of this season, joining Babe Ruth, Mark McGwire, and Sammy Sosa as the only players with four 50-homer seasons. But also this, Judge can become the first player since Mickey Mantle in 1956 to be at least a .330 hitter and hit 50 home runs. The entire list, Ruth, he did it three times, Jimmy Fox did it twice, Hack Wilson, and Mantle. It's a testament to the incredibly comfortable place Judge resides as a hitter, a physical outlier with an impeccable command of his powers. It's pretty cool to have this guy go out and win a batting title, which is really significant in the fact that he's such a power hitter yet can hit for such a high batting average, says Yankees batting coach James Rawson. His name is right there now with some of the best players who've ever played our game. And he's still going. His story's not finished yet. He's still writing his story. It's so cool to watch this live and really have no idea where the story ends. He's one of the greatest players of our time. With, Judge says, the good fortune to be a Yankee. As Judge noted, his 144 strikeouts between Class AA and AAA in 2015 made him a polarizing prospect. Since fighting his way to the big leagues, Judge's career has been a remarkable act of compartmentalization, going from relatively late bloomer, he didn't debut until he was 24, to instant smash. And even as he was winning Rookie of the Year in 2017, smashing 52 home runs and just missing his first MVP award to Jose Altuve, an outcome that still rankles the organization, he struck out 208 times. The Yankees have only missed the playoffs once in that span, with gut punch AL Championship Series losses to the Astros in 2017 and 2019, and a five-game defeat to the Dodgers in the 24 World Series, their deepest championship flirtations. Judge bore the load of resident Superman in all those years, eventually becoming the club's 16th captain in its history. All the while, he hasn't stopped growing. His strikeout rate has been in a steady decline since debuting with a 30.7% rate that peaked at 31.5% back in 2019. He's currently on pace to to better last year's career low of 24.3%, even as his home run total and batting average have climbed. It is both a result of hard work and, Judge believes, environmental factors. He's been a constant in the Yankees lineup that has featured all-star or MVP talents such as Giancarlo Stanton, Juan Soto, Anthony Rizzo, and DJ LeMahieu. That's LeMahieu. This past season, the club added former MVPs Paul Goldschmidt and Cody Bellinger to the mix, giving the club four MVPs in the lineup most nights. Yet, it was a conversation with Alex Rodriguez in one of his first spring trainings with the Yankees that instilled in him the notion of never-ending growth. I think it was A-Rod, says Judge, who told me this: you'll do well in high A or double A and get moved to triple A, and it's a whole new bunch of pitchers you're facing. And then you get called to the bigs. This is my 18th year in the big leagues. You're seeing the same pitchers, the same teams, seeing the same sequencing. Eventually, a player settles in. It helps a hitter, I think, from that standpoint. The older you get, the more knowledge you get, the more information you can download, says Judge. Especially playing with a team like this, we go out and sign some of the big guys out there who've been around the league. Now I get the chance to pick their brains a bit. It's Stanton. It's Goldschmidt. I can take their little nuggets here and a little nugget there. It goes back to everybody in this room. They want to get better every year. You want to learn from the good things that happened the year before and the bad things that happened the year before and find a way to shorten those bad things and make them a strength of yours. While plenty has changed for Judge in his near decade in the game, one thing remains the same: a pitched battle for AL MVP award. Judge and Seattle Mariners catcher Cal Raleigh are the consensus 1 and 2, each with historic, even overwhelming pitches for the honor. Raleigh set major league records for home runs by both a catcher and a switch hitter. His 5,858 homers, that is, broke Mantle's record, while again putting in gold glove caliber work behind the plate. Judge was batting .326 to Raleigh's .247, has a large OPS advantage, 1.123 to 949, and leads in WAR, 9.2 to 8.8. Judge's added value in his Wade Boggs era is a situational awareness that is off the charts most nights. Knowing where the game's at and what pitch to expect and firing off the appropriate swing to match the moment. Thursday night, September 18th, it was coming up in the eighth inning of a 4-0 game, runners at the corners and a desire to tack on and stay away from the Yankees' highest leverage relievers. So he shortened up and pumped a fly ball to medium deep left for a sacrifice fly and a 5-0 lead that stayed that way. Even before the pitch comes, it's just understanding the situation, says Judge. The game's going to tell you what to do. It always tells you. It could be your first at-bat of the game. It could be your last at-bat in the ninth with the game on the line. If you're watching the game, you'll see it, especially with our lineup. If I'm hitting two, second that is, that means I have to get on base. If that's a base hit, if that's a single, taking a walk, let Belly, Goldie, Stanton finish it up. That's what you got to do. A couple of hours later, Judge proved his point. With two outs and nobody on in the top of the first, Judge calmly wrapped a single to right field off Orioles starter Tomoyuki Sugano. Bellinger followed with a single. Stanton then slammed a Sugano pitch over the wall in short right, the 450th home run of his career, for a 3-0 Yankees lead. Two innings later, Judge unloaded a Sugano full-count sweeper and golfed it deep over the left field fence for home run number 49. A 3-0 game became 4-0 and a 6-1 Yankees victory. And Judge's 364th career home run, trailing only the hallowed trio of Ruth, Mantle, and Lou Gehrig in Yankees history. With this experience, you understand yourself more and more, says Yankees manager Aaron Boone, who has managed Judge for all but his rookie season of 2017. He's definitely gotten better in that regard. More than anyone, he gets pitched to carefully. That's part of what makes him, quote, the best player in the league, his ability to lay off pitches. I felt like he had that in him when he first got here, and it's steadily gotten a little better over the years. The Yankees entered the week within two games of the Toronto Blue Jays in the AL East and firmly in control of the league's number one wildcard spot, which would guarantee a home playoff series. And Judge will get yet another shot at rounding out his to-do list with a World Series championship. It was a tough Fall Classic debut in 2024 for Judge, who went 4-for-18 against the Dodgers and muffed a fly ball to kickstart the clinching Game 5 rally, yet another to grow on. We had a chance to go to our first World Series. It didn't end the way we wanted to, says Judge, a center fielder in 24, but now back in right field. But just getting those at-bats, that experience, ultimately will just help us the next time we get there. It's all learning. A lot of negatives, a lot of positives. Can you take pride and ego out of it and look at them from what did we do well and what did we do badly? And how can I improve? And just then kind of move forward. If Judge's postseason arc ever matches his regular season exploits, the outcome will almost certainly fall in his favor. There are a lot of guys that gain a certain level of experience who get satisfied with what they are. The beauty about Judgey is he's never satisfied. He's always trying to get better, says Rowson. As great as he is and what he's done, he's always thinking, what can I do today to get better than I was yesterday? And that's what separates him from so many people. Okay, now let's turn to the 32 things we learned in week 3 of the NFL season. This column is by Nate Davis with USA Today. Zero, that is number zero. Number of rushing TDs scored by Green Bay Packers running back Josh Jacobs, breaking his 11-game streak, including the playoffs, of scoring at least once on the ground, the sixth longest in league history. Adding insult to injury, Jacobs averaged just 1.9 yards on his 16 carries, the worst output of his 7-year career when he had at least 12 attempts, as the Pack were shocked 13-10 on the road by the Cleveland Browns. 1. The number of Minnesota Viking players ever to score 2 defensive touchdowns in a single game. Cornerback Isaiah Rogers becoming the founding member. The most dominant Mr. Rogers in the league this day. He returned an interception 87 yards for a score and brought a fumble back 66 yards for another in the Vikings' 48-10 blowout of the Cincinnati Bengals. For good measure, Rogers caused 2 fumbles, including the one he returned, and broke up 2 passes. He's the first player since 2000 with 2 TDs and a pair of forced fumbles in the same game. May as well hand Rodgers the NFC Defensive Player of the Week honors. 2. The number of backup quarterbacks saddled with losses. The New York Jets' Tyrod Taylor and Cincinnati Bengals' Jake Browning, unable to pick up the slack for injured Justin Fields and Joe Burrow, respectively. 3. The number of backup QBs who notched victories. The Vikings' Carson Wentz, Washington Commanders' Marcus Mariota, and San Francisco 49ers' Mac Jones all getting fill-in W's for the injured J.J. McCarthy, Jaden Daniels, and Brock Purdy, respectively. 4. Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Aaron Rodgers ranks alone with the 4th most TD patches in league passes, that is, in league history, 510, after breaking his tie with Brett Favre at 508. Rodgers has a way to go to catch Peyton Manning at 539. He's 3rd on the list. 5. Speaking of backup quarterbacks, the Atlanta Falcons' Kirk Cousins will apparently remain one for now, even though he's making $27.5 million this season and was called in to take over for the highly ineffective second-year quarterback Michael Penix Jr. as the Falcons were blown out by 30-0 by the previously winless Carolina Panthers. 6. The number of teams that remain undefeated. The Chargers, the Bills, Colts, 49ers, Eagles, and Bucks all improving to 3-0. 6A. The number of teams that go into Week 4 winless. The Texans, the Jets, the Titans, Dolphins, Saints, Giants, all 0-3. 7. The number of games through Sunday of Week 3 decided in the final 2 minutes and 30 seconds of regulation. This is why we watch. 8. Chicago Bears quarterback Caleb Williams has endured his share of, well, deserved, criticism, some coming from me. But props on Sunday's showing when he matched his career high with 4 TD passes while crafting a personal best 142.6 passer rating in a 31-14 beatdown of the Cowboys. Maybe he's about to take off with rookie coach Ben Johnson as the wind beneath his wings. 9, the number of non-offensive touchdowns scored Sunday. 9, wow. 5 coming by a defense, 2 off punt returns, and the 2 from blocked field goal tries. It's the most in a week since 2020. 10, combined catches by Minnesota's Justin Jefferson and Cincinnati's Ja'Marr Chase, former LSU teammates, who are now almost inarguably the league's two best receivers, in a strange and lopsided matchup between teams deploying backup quarterbacks. 11, Steelers outside linebacker T.J. Watt had gone 6 games in a row, including playoffs, without a sack before getting his first 2 of the season in the 21-14 defeat of the New England Patriots. Watt had never had a sackless streak of more than 3 games during his 9-year career. 12. Speaking of sacks, Washington Commanders linebacker Bobby Wagner, a future Hall of Famer if there ever was one, had 2 in his undermanned team's 41-24 defeat of the Las Vegas Raiders. Pass rush impact isn't what will put Wagner, one of the best defensive quarterbacks of this century, into Canton, but this was the 5th time the typically effective blitzer has had multiple sacks in a game in his 14-year career. 13. Number of consecutive regular season games the Buffalo Bills have won at Highmark Stadium, going back to the 23 season, currently the league's lengthiest home heater. Not great news for the rest of the conference, as the perennial AFC East champs are very much on track to capture home field advantage for this season's playoffs in their building's final season. 14. Even with electric Daniels out and running back Austin Eckler lost for the season, Washington still rushed for 201 yards, by committee that is, journeyman Jeremy McNichols posting a career best and game high 78 yards on 4 carries. 15. They weren't necessarily impactful, but Raiders wide receiver Trey Tucker caught 3 TD passes from Geno Smith in the loss to Washington. Tucker already has 5 in 2025, matching his total combined from his first 2 NFL seasons. 16. The number of wins credited to Wentz since the start of the 2020 season. More notably, since then, he has started for 6 different teams in each of the past 6 years, a first in the Super Bowl era, making a very successful debut, 173 yards with 2 TDs, in the Vikes win over Browning Bengals. 17. Do you believe in miracles? Well, yes. If only Al Michaels had been on this call for the Philadelphia Eagles' 33-26 comeback win over the LA Rams. Not only did Philly win its 2nd nail-biter of the year over LA, the Rams nearly upset the Eagles in the division round of the playoffs at Lincoln Financial Field in January. 336-pound defensive tackle Jordan Davis' 61-yard touchdown run following a block of the Rams' game-winning field goal try allowed Philadelphia to cover the point spread, which Michaels would have gleefully made note of. 18. Davis's block came on the heels of another by teammate Jalen Carter. The Eagles became the first team since at least 1978 to block a pair of field goal tries, that is, in the 4th quarter of the same game. 19. The Jets were in position to get their first victory for rookie head coach Aaron Glenn, taking a 27-26 lead with fewer than 2 minutes to play against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, after defensive end Will McDonald IV blocked a field goal attempt of his own and returned the football 50 yards to pay dirt. 20. The number of drives it took for the Indianapolis Colts to finally punt, the most to start an NFL season. And speaking of 20, it was a nice punt by Indy's Rigoberto Sanchez, who dropped a 46-yarder inside the Tennessee Titans' 20-yard line. 21. Number of combined penalties, 14 by Tampa Bay, for 205 aggregate yards in the Bucs-Jets game. 22. Alas, the Jets didn't have enough juice to win the Todd Bowles Bowl, their former coach's Bucs driving 48 yards over the final 7 plays to set up Chase McLaughlin's game-winning 36-yard field goal at the gun. 23. Perhaps the close shave was due to Tampa Bay's creamsicle white throwbacks last worn in 1976 when the expansion Bucks finished 0-14. 24, Tampa Bay, which has started 2-0 each of the past five seasons, including all four under Bowles, is now 3-0 for the first time since 2005. 25. However, Taylor, at 197 yards, 2 TDs, pick six passing, and team best 48 rushing yards, the 15th-year veteran was making his first start since 2023. Surprisingly played very early, MVP candidate Baker Mayfield, 233 yards TD passing, plus 44 yards rushing, to a surprising draw. The duo were Browns teammates in 2018 when Mayfield was the number one pick of that year's draft. Number 26, not much to see rookie watch. Number one pick Cam Ward continued to look overmatched for the Titans, throwing an early pick six and getting sacked four more times for his winless team. Such is the life of a young quarterback trying to lift a flailing franchise. But the 85 sack pace Ward is on remains highly worrisome. 27. Not much to see rookie watch. Number two pick Travis Hunter played another 80 snaps, 43 on defense, and made six tackles but caught just one ball for 21 yards as a receiver. Again, no intent here to pick on him, but he has yet to display the type of impact on either side of the ball that would justify the bold move rookie general manager James Gladstone made to get him in April. But let's give Hunter a lot more time. 28. Again, not much to see rookie watch. Number 6, pick Ashton Jaunte rest for 63 yards on 17 carries in a loss. It was easily the best showing of his three games, which also tells you how it's been going thus far. 29. A lot to see rookie watch. Browns quarterback Quinshon Judkins, the 36th pick of this year's draft, and part of what Cleveland got in order to give up the pick used by Jacksonville on Hunter, ran for 94 yards and a TD, his second NFL game after an offensive season, rather an offseason, when Judkins' legal issues drew the kind of attention he didn't want. But now he has 155 rushing yards. 30, a lot to see rookie watch. Seattle Seahawks wide receiver Torrey Horton, the 166th pick of this year's draft, scored on a 95-yard punt return and a 14-yard reception in the 44-13 rout of the New Orleans Saints. Horton has already found the end zone three times in his three NFL games. 31. The Bucks weren't the only team in throwback or alternate uniforms, though their game against the Jets, who permanently reinstituted their 1980s look last season, was the most aesthetically pleasing game on the slate. 32. Also switching it up, Panthers went with a black helmet, Browns, debut of their all-brown alpha dog look, Jags with their prowler throwbacks, Patriots, Pat Patriot throwbacks, Saints, debut of alternate white helmet, and 49ers, also in throwbacks. Well, back at number 8 on our list of 32 things, there was a highlight about Caleb Williams, so let's go through this article by Nancy Armour, also a columnist with USA Today. This game is exactly what the Chicago Bears and their fans hoped for when they drafted Caleb Williams and hired Ben Johnson. An explosive offense, an offense that's fun to watch, an offense that can grind opposing defenses into submission, and a defense that's opportunistic, a defense that doesn't beat itself. Most of all, a team that can win. "We have so many guys that care," Williams said after a 31-14 thrashing of the Cowboys. "We always felt that our hard work, our preparation, the long drive drill, the 2 minutes, the moments, the 4 minute situational third downs, all those things, those are going to come," Williams said Sunday on the 21st. "I know we started off 0-2, but the belief was still there and the trust was still there. It's just being able to go out there and do it." Now, one game is not enough to revive a franchise or declare Williams the quarterback the Bears have been searching for since before he was born. This was against the Cowboys, after all, a team that has given up a whopping 891 yards, 720 of them, wow, in the air, and 8 touchdowns in the last 2 games and doesn't yet have Jadeveon Clowney. Still, for a team and a fan base starved for any signs of progress, this was a game they desperately needed. Williams matched his career high with 4 touchdowns, earning fans free hot dogs this week from the Wiener's Circle, while posting his best quarterback rating at 142.6 yet. He finished a game without a sack for the first time since the Bears made him the overall number one pick in the 2024 draft, and Chicago did not have any turnovers or pre-snap penalties. While Romo Odunze remains Williams' favorite target, he threw to 8 receivers. Williams was able to get rid of the ball quickly, that he was able to pull off the flea flicker that resulted in a 65-yard touchdown to Luther Burden III is a miracle, and his footwork looked better. He made better decisions, and unlike previous games, most of his misses were to the right area. The defense, meanwhile, set the tone on Dallas's first possession. Javonte Williams had rushed for 22 yards and was trying to get out of bounds when Tyreek Stevenson ripped the ball from his hands. The D finished with interceptions on each of Dallas's last 3 drives, 2 by Tremaine Edmonds. Rather, that's Tremaine Edmonds. It builds confidence for us as a team and an organization to be able to go out here and win these games and feel confident about what we've got on this field, Williams said. Chicago fans have been punked by the Bears on a regular basis since 1985. There have been some years when they resembled a real team. Lovie Smith took them to the Super Bowl in 2006 and had a winning record in 5 of his 9 seasons. But mostly, it's been a long stretch of futility, especially lately. Chicago hasn't made the playoffs since 2020 and has had a winning record once in the last 12 years. Johnson is the 5th head coach in that time, and Williams is the 3rd quarterback the Bears have drafted in the first round since 2017. But Johnson's success as Detroit's offensive coordinator, coupled with Williams' talent and savvy, gave fans optimism the Bears had finally gotten it right. But then the season began. The Bears gagged up an 11-point lead in a loss to the Minnesota Vikings in the season opener, then got flattened by the Lions last weekend. Things were bad enough for a players-only meeting before the Cowboys game. And for the Wiener Circle, a local institution that specializes in hot dogs and sides of snark, to make its bet. The first 2 weeks had not gone the way we wanted to. It's early, but we've got to get the issues fixed, and I thought the guys were committed to that this week, said Johnson, given a game ball for his first win as a head coach. Again, one game doesn't make the Bears contenders for the Super Bowl, or even the division title. We're behind the 8-ball here, Johnson cautioned. We're 1-2, and we've got to get back to 500. But for one day at least, the Bears lived up to their promise. After being so bad for so long, that's a huge victory. And now for a quick rundown of the Week 4 matchups in the NFL. On Thursday, the Seahawks play the Cardinals. Both teams are 2-1, and right now the Cardinals are favored by 1 in the spread. Sunday starts with the Vikings at 2-1 versus the Steelers at 2-1. Should be a good game. Vikings are favored by 2.5. Another Sunday game, Commanders at Falcons. Commanders are 2-1. The Falcons are 1-2. And the Commanders have the spread by 2.5. Next, we have the Saints and Bills. An interesting matchup since the Saints are 0-3 and the Bills are 3-0. The Bills are favored by 16.5. Then, we're still in Sunday games here. Browns versus Lions. The Browns are 1-2 and the Lions are 2-1. The betting spread has the Lions by 8.5. Then the Panthers are playing the Patriots with both teams at 1-2, but the Patriots are favored by 5.5. Then continuing with Sunday games, the Giants at 0-3 and the Chargers are playing each other. The Chargers, playing in East Rutherford, are favored by 6. The Eagles play the Buccaneers in Tampa. Both teams are 3-0 and the Eagles are favored by 3.5. Then the Titans and Texans play, and they're both 0-3, playing in Houston, and the Texans are favored by 7 points. Then we have the Colts and Rams later game on Sunday. The Colts are 3-0 and the Rams are 2-1. Should be another tight game, but the Rams are favored by 3.5. The Jaguars play the Steelers at San Francisco, actually Santa Clara. The Steelers, the 49ers are 3-0, and the Jaguars are 2-1. 49ers are favored by 3.5. The Ravens and the Chiefs play each other. The Ravens are 1-2, and the Chiefs are 1-2. And the Ravens are favored. They're playing in Kansas City, though. Then the Bears play the Raiders. Both teams are 1-2, and the Bears are favored by 1. Next, we have the Packers at the Cowboys. Packers are 2-1, and the Cowboys are 1-2, and this is in Arlington, Texas. But the Packers are favored by 6.5 points. Then we have on Monday night, this should be a thrilling game, 2-0-3 teams, the Jets playing the Dolphins in Miami, and the Dolphins are favored by 2.5. And the other Monday night game is the Bengals at 2-1 playing the Broncos at home in Denver. The Broncos are only 1-2, but the Broncos are favored by 7. And that wraps up the NFL's Week 4 matchups. Next, we'll highlight some college football with the key games to watch this weekend. This is from an article by Eddie Tamanis, also with USA Today. First, he cites number 22 Southern Cal at 4-0, 2-0 in the Big Ten, playing at Illinois, which is ranked number 23. They're 3-1 and 0-1 in the Big Ten, and USC so far is favored by 7. After cracking the US LMB coaches poll for the first time this season, the Trojans now put that ranking on the line with this road trip. The Fighting Illini, meanwhile, are in a desperate need of a reset after being thoroughly humbled by the Indiana team. Illinois quarterback Luke Altmyer didn't have much time to operate last week as his offensive line was constantly overwhelmed. That kind of physicality has not been a defining trait for USC in recent years, but linebacker Eric Gentry does give the Trojans a veteran presence in the middle. USC quarterback Jaden Malava, I'm sorry, the name must be Mayava, has 9 scoring throws without a pick and is getting solid ground support from running backs Wayman Jordan and Eli Sanders. Linebacker Gabe Hakus and the Illinois front must regroup quickly. Predictions? Following a late-night game in its home time zone a week ago, the Trojans face a major body clock adjustment with this morning kickoff. Will it matter? Probably not, but it might be worth watching early. Southern Cal is predicted 38-20. Next, number 1 Ohio State at 3-0 at Washington, also 3-0. The spread has Ohio State by 8.5. This is the Buckeyes' only visit to the Big Ten's West Coast enclave, and while it isn't Oregon or USC, it might not be a walk in the park. The Huskies handled the non-conference portion of the schedule with relative ease and are now ready to see how they stack up among the league's upper tier. Washington quarterback Damon Williams Jr. has been efficient, though having running back Jonah Coleman with him in the backfield has certainly helped. If they can keep Caleb Downs and the Buckeyes' excellent safety group busy, there might be opportunities to stretch the field. Ohio State quarterback Julian Sayin did enough in his first major test against Texas and has since gotten in a couple of tune-ups. You'll want to get standout wide receiver Jeremiah Smith involved early, though. Huskies safety Alex McLaughlin will assist with the coverage. Prediction: Washington will ride the home clown energy to some big plays early. Eventually, though, the Buckeyes' superior talent will win the game. I've got Ohio State winning 41-24. Next is number 4 LSU at 4-0, playing at number 11 Ole Miss, also 4-0, with Ole Miss favored by 2.5. In most weeks, this clash of unbeatens in the SEC would be the undisputed headliner. When all is said and done, it might prove to be the most consequential, as both teams have plenty of challenges ahead and would be very much liking to have this one in the win column. The stronger units for both teams will be on the field when Ole Miss has possession. The Rebels have moved the ball effectively with either quarterback Austin Simmons or Trinidad Chambliss at the controls. Workhorse running back Kiwan Lacy is a big part of all packages, and he'll likely have extra attention from LSU linebacker Harold Perkins. Tigers haven't been as flashy, though they've faced stiffer resistance. Quarterback Garrett Neusmeyer and running back Caden Durham might find more openings against the Rebels, but defensive tackle Xavier Harris is hard to move in the middle. As good as the Tigers' defense has been, it can't hold up all day. The offense is going to have to make some plays, and it won't make enough to keep up with the highly motivated Rebels. I've got Ole Miss at 31-17. Next is number 12 Indiana, who's 4-0, playing at Iowa, who's 3-1. The early line has Indiana by 7.5. The Hoosiers must put last week's strong statement win in the rearview mirror as they hit the road to face the Hawkeyes, who had a solid result themselves at Rutgers in their Big Ten opener. Linebacker Jaden Harrell and the Iowa defense buttoned down in the second half after a rough start last week. They can't afford a repeat of that formula against dynamic IU quarterback Fernando Mendoza and his stable of backs. The good news for the Hawkeyes, with the improved output by quarterback Mike Gronowski and the offense, but linebacker Aiden Fisher and the Hoosiers front could be harder to solve. It wouldn't come as a shock if the kicking game played a major role, with weapons like Iowa's Caden Wettjen on the Hoosiers' D'Angelo Pons capable of a big return at any time. Prediction? This result might create as much of a shockwave, but winning in Iowa City is never a guarantee. The Hoosiers will find a way and then enjoy a week off before a huge showdown at Oregon. Indiana will win 28-20. Next, we have Arizona at 3-0, playing at number 13 Iowa State. Iowa State, the Cyclones, favored by 5.5. The Cyclones got an early jump start in Big 12 play a month ago. They finally returned to league competition in Ames as they welcome the Wildcats, who are still something of a mystery team at this point, but have shown signs of improvement after going 4-8 in 24. Iowa State is coming off a needed open date, which could translate to a quick start for quarterback Rocco Becht and running back Carson Hansen. The Wildcats, however, are also rested, and defensive back Genesis Smith and company don't surrender many long gainers. Arizona quarterback Noah Fifita has 6 scoring passes without an interception, though his completion percentage has dipped slightly to 59%. He'll be up against a deep Cyclone secondary featuring safety Jameson Patton. My prediction? Curiously, these teams do have a common opponent, though Arizona's win against Kansas State doesn't count in the Big 12 standings. This one will, but the home team will prevail. Iowa State by 24-13. Next, we have number 5, Oregon, who's 4-0, playing at Penn State, who's ranked number 2 and is 3-0. The early line has Penn State favored by 3. This Big Ten blockbuster has been circled on the calendar all month, as we finally get to see if the Nittany Lions are worthy of their lofty preseason billing. Oregon, to be fair, hasn't been challenged much either, though the Ducks did get an earlier taste of conference travel at Northwestern. Oregon quarterback Dante Moore has the offense humming, averaging just over 10 yards per pass attempt, spreading the ball among a slew of big play targets like wide receiver DeCorian Moore and tight end Kenyon Sandick. Penn State defensive end Danny Dennis Sutton and linebacker Tony Rojas will try to make his job difficult. Nittany Lions quarterback Drew Aller hasn't had to test the deep waters much, as running backs Catron Allen and Nicholas Singleton have also picked up where they left off last season. He'll probably need to stretch the field more this week to keep Ducks linebacker Bryce Betcher, at bay. Prediction? The Nittany Lions will have a slight rest advantage coming off an open week, though the Ducks weren't exactly pushed to the brink by Oregon State. Both teams should be ready to put on a show. We'll take the visitors to pull off the mild upset, Oregon 42-38. In our last highlight game, number 16 Alabama 2-1, playing at number 3 Georgia, who's 3-0, and Georgia's favored by 3 right now. One can only hope this showdown of recent national powers comes close to matching the drama of some past encounters. The stakes might not be as high this time, though the Crimson Tide certainly want to avoid taking a second L on their ledger this early in the campaign. The Bulldogs, for their part, are happy to have gotten out of Tennessee unscathed a couple of weeks ago, and now look to defend their home turf. The Georgia defense wasn't exactly lights out in Knoxville, which could bode well for Alabama quarterback Ty Simpson and his most dependable wide receiver, Jeremy Bernard.
Jeremy?
Chris Cole and the Bulldogs linebacking core have had some success on blitzes, but more pressure is needed from the front line. UGA quarterback Gunnar Stockton's most dangerous weapon is wide receiver Zachariah Branch, who will be monitored at all times by Crimson Tide safety Bray Hubbard. My prediction, a decade ago, we would have expected a low-scoring affair. This time, a track meet seems more likely. We'll go with the Tide outlasting the Bulldogs in a squeaker for a second consecutive year, Alabama 45-42. Now let's take a trip around the base pass in the article by Bob Nightingale. It would be one of the most seismic shifts in baseball economic history if Commissioner Rob Manfred delivers on his vow to have all local broadcast rights to be under MLB's control by 28. It could mean that the Milwaukee Brewers, as an example, would have the same TV revenue as the Dodgers and the Yankees. The Dodgers earn $280 million a year from their local TV rights, while more than half of the other baseball teams earn less than $50 million. That's 280 versus 50. Needless to say, owners are skeptical that teams like the Dodgers, Yankees, Red Sox, Cubs, and Blue Jays would ever be amenable to such a plan. In the meantime, just in case you don't think there'll be a lockout after the 26th season, good luck finding TV and radio broadcasters getting contracts from their club extending into the 27th season. Now for the base paths. Teams are upset that the Dodgers will have one more pitcher than everyone else on their roster, since there's a special exemption for Shohei Ohtani as a two-way player. If Ohtani is a starting pitcher, he can remain in the game as a DH once he's been replaced on the mound. But if he starts the game as a DH and pitches out of the bullpen, the Dodgers would lose the DH once his relief appearance is over. The only way Ohtani could stay in the game would be moving into the outfield, where he hasn't played since 2021. This is why it's pretty far-fetched that Ohtani will have any role in the postseason besides being a DH and a starting pitcher. Angel starter Kyle Hendricks, who helped lead the Cubs to the 2016 World Championship, has informed friends that he expects to retire after this season. And the question for the Phillies is not whether they will bring back outfielder Nick Castellanos, but how much will it cost when they trade him away, realizing that they will have to eat a substantial portion of his $20 million contract in 2026. While Castellanos is saying that he wants to do everything possible for the Phillies to win the World Series, he is also increasingly outspoken about his displeasure as a part-time player and criticized manager Rob Thompson's communication with him. Communication over the years has been questionable, at least in my experience. There's been time where things have been said, and then over the course of the years, I'll have expectations because I'll latch on to what's been said, and then the actions would be different. Then I'm kind of left just thinking and whatnot, but again, it is what it is. I don't really talk to Rob all that often. I play whenever he tells me to play, and I sit whenever he tells me to sit. Major League Baseball's qualifying offer will increase to about $22 million from $21.05 million of a year ago, as the New York Post first reported. Only 13 players have ever accepted the qualifying offer, with only Cincinnati Reds pitcher Nick Martinez accepting it last year. How stunning is the Cleveland Guardians' meteoric rise back into contention, going from 12 and a half games out on August 25th to one game behind the Detroit Tigers entering Sunday. Not a single contender was advanced scouting Cleveland until this weekend. By the way, Cleveland is now tied with the Tigers. No one is more responsible for the historic comeback than Jose Ramirez, who has produced his second consecutive 30-homer, 40-stolen base season. Let's see, they trailed the Tigers by 15.5 on July 9th, then by 12.5 on the 26th, then by 9.5 on the 10th. Now, after going an MLB best 44-23 since July 7th, they have fate in their own hands with three games against the Tigers and Cleveland this week, now down to just two. If the Guardians win the division, it would be the greatest comeback in Major League history, eclipsing the Yankees' 14-game deficit in 1978 to overcome the Red Sox. New York Mets right fielder Juan Soto became the third player in MLB history to hit at least 40 home runs with 100 RBIs, score 100 runs, walk 100 times, and steal 30 bases, joining Barry Bonds and Jeff Bagwell, who achieved the feat twice apiece. This could be the first season in MLB history that five players hit 30 home runs and stole 30 bases in the same season, with Soto, Jazz Chisholm, Corbin Carroll, and Jose Ramirez already accomplishing the feat. Cubs outfielder Pete Crow Armstrong was one homer away from joining the 30-30 club at press time. If MLB had adopted the three-team wildcard tier in 2012, the Brewers, who qualified for the playoffs in 7 of the past 8 years, would have even more of a glossy resume, with two more postseason appearances. Veteran starting pitcher Charlie Morton, who has yielded a 7.09 ERA in his 9 starts since he joined the Tigers, may call it a career after the season. Dodgers three-time Cy Young winner Clayton Kershaw, who's 37, has been flirting with retirement since the Dodgers won the World Series in 2020, and he's going out in style with his 10-2 record and 3.55 ERA in 21 starts this season. He announced that September 19th, now past, was his final regular season start at Dodger Stadium, and it may be unlikely that he makes a postseason start after reaching the postseason in his final 13 seasons. Kershaw leaves with 222 victories, a 2.54 ERA, and 3,045 strikeouts. Next stop, Cooperstown. Favorite Kershaw stat? Kershaw was the starting pitcher in 301 Dodgers victories and 149 Dodgers defeats, the only other pitcher in baseball history to start at least 300 victories with fewer than 185 team losses is Lefty Grove, 1893. Pretty cool seeing Kershaw's former teammates show up for the send-off. Austin Barnes, Andre Ethier, Russell Martin, Trace Thompson, Jimmy Rollins, A.J. Pollock, and yes, Rams quarterback Matthew Stafford, his high school teammate. They all wore number 22 Dodgers jerseys. Major League Baseball sent out a memo last week prohibiting teams from scouting and filming high school players from October 15th to January 15th, and collegiate papers, players that is, from November 15th to January 15th, hoping that amateurs use the time to rest and recover to help reduce the rash of pitching injuries. The memo says, teams are still allowed to interact with players and their families in a non-baseball capacity, including visits to the player's home. Team employees can also attend games involving relatives, as long as they're doing so in a non-professional capacity, whatever that means. Now, let's see just how many teams circumvent the new rules with distant cousins suddenly showing up with their radar guns. The Cubs' success with the third best record in baseball in the National League is quite remarkable considering the woes of center fielder Pete Crow Armstrong and right fielder Kyle Tucker in the second half. Crow Armstrong is hitting a meager 207 with 4 homers, 19 RBIs, and a 605 OPS, while Tucker, doing a little better, is hitting 242 with 5 homers, 17 RBIs, and a 777 OPS, and he's been on the sidelines since September the 2nd. The Phillies did try to sign Kyle Schwarber before the start of the season, but the two sides never came close to reaching an agreement. Kansas City Royals are likely to pick up All-Star catcher Salvador Perez's $13.5 million club option in 2026, considering it's an $8.5 million pay cut after producing 30 homers and 95 RBIs this season. Perez is one of eight catchers who have hit 300 or more home runs in their major league career, and six are in the Hall of Fame. Baltimore Orioles ace Trevor Rogers won't win the Cy Young Award this season, but no one in the American League has been so dominant since missing the first 2 months of the season with a partially dislocated kneecap. Rogers, who has pitched 106 and a third innings this season, has made 17 starts and given up 16 earned runs for a 1.35 ERA to go along with his 1.78 opposing batting average and a 0.87 whip. His ERA is the second best among pitchers with at least 16 starts since 1920, trailing only Hall of Famer Bob Gibson in 1968, who yielded a fantastic 1.12 ERA. The San Diego Padres expected shortstop Xander Bogaerts to return Monday, September 22nd, after missing almost a month with a fracture in his left foot. You know, the Arizona Diamondbacks have had a bizarre season in which they had a historic four-homer game from their third baseman, scored 10 runs in a single inning at Wrigley Field, and had a pitcher throw a one-hit shutout for nine innings, and they lost all three games. Guardians pitchers Emmanuel Clase and Luis Ortiz are on non-disciplinary leave until further notice while being investigated for gambling, and they're training to play winter ball for the Estrellas in their native Dominican Republic. While Clase and Ortiz can't pitch for the Guardians, there are no restrictions in the collective bargaining agreement to prevent them from pitching winter ball. "We have no say in the matter," Guardians GM Mike Chernoff told reporters. The players, however, do have a say in voting on playoff shares, and it will be fascinating to see if they get a full share if the Guardians reach the postseason. This is the first time in Tigers franchise history, well, at least since the inaugural 1965 draft, that they've had three homegrown players hit 25 homers in the same season. Riley Green with 34, Spencer Torkelson with 31, and Kerry Carpenter with 26. Now, I think I'll close with kind of an offbeat little column here written by Cesar Brioso with USA Today. News of Robert Redford's death last week ignited a, shall we say, spirited debate among USA Today sports aficionados about where the Hollywood Legends film The Natural ranks in the pantheon of baseball movies. The debate prompted this question: better baseball catcher Kevin Costner's Crash Davis or Gina Davis's Dottie Henson? Debate? But we digress. Not everyone appreciated Redford and director Barry Levinson's 1984 adaptation of Bernard Malamud's 1952 novel, with 1989's Field of Dreams also the recipient of considerable, if unwarranted, shade. Here's just one baseball fan's list of the best baseball movies of all times, and you can let your angry comments begin. Number one, Bull Durham from 1988. Quote, "We need a live rooster. Was it a live rooster? We need a live rooster to take the curse off Jose's glove." Number two, Field of Dreams from 1989. "I love it because it is sappy. Sorry, not sorry." Number three, A League of Their Own, 1992. "Tom Hanks deserved best actor consideration." Number three, no, rather number four, The Sandlot from 1993. "You're killing me, Smalls." Wendy Peppercorn squints. "What's not to love?" Number five, Major League, 1989. "Bob Uecker deserved best supporting actor consideration." Number six, Moneyball from 2011. "Every time I run across it on TV, I'm stopping to watch it." Number seven, Long Gone from 1987. Don't remember it myself. The best baseball movie you've never heard of. Came out on HBO. Must watch if you can find it. Number eight, The Pride of the Yankees from 1942. A classic that still holds up well. Number nine, Eight Men Out, That was from 1988. I get it, yes. There are inaccuracies, but still a good watch. And at number 10, The Natural from 1984. A lot of people hate it, but I'm not one of them. And for honorable mentions, in no particular order, The Bad News Bears from 76, Bang the Drum Slowly from 73, The Bingo Long Travelers All-Star and Motor Kings from 1976, 42, which of course is Jackie Robinson in 2013, and 61 with an asterisk from 2001, which is the story of Roger Maris's home run chase. Composite rankings of the best baseball movies compiled from IMDb, Rotten Tomatoes, and MLB.com. Spoiler, big Sandlot snub. Number one from that composite, Bull Durham. Number two, Field of Dreams. Number three, Moneyball. Number four, A League of Their Own. Number five, 8 Man Out. That's 8 Men Out, silly me. Number six, The Natural. Number seven, Major League. Number eight, The Rookie. Number nine, here's a surprise, The Bad News Bears. And number 10, 42. Well, folks, for myself, I'd watch about half of those anytime I catch them on TV. I love baseball movies. And that about winds it up for me today. This is Kent Batty, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. And as they used to say in the radio in the old days, keep those cards and letters rolling in. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.